your host TW, and whoever you are and wherever you may be, I know you have so many choices for your entertainment, so thank you for spending just a few minutes of your day with me. Real quick before we get started, go ahead and hit that subscribe button so you're subscribed to the channel. Hit that like button so everybody knows you like this video. And hit that notification bell so you get notified each and every time I drop some brand new fire content on this page. On today's show, we're going to talk about MJF finally becoming the AEW World Champion. It's everything the AEW fans have wanted, but where do they go now? Survivor Series was absolutely excellent, and it gave me a tiny little glimpse, a tiny little idea as to where things could be going, but the truth is, we don't know where it's going, and I love it. We're going to talk about all the great things going on from women in the world of professional wrestling, but first, hits and misses. Miss. The AEW media scrum after Full Gear was another example of AEW just looking like they haven't quite figured out how to be a big-time wrestling company yet. MJF starts off the show, you know, comes out. He ends the show, you know, with a big victory, and it's all AEW fans have wanted to see for so long. What does he do? He comes out. Cuts a promo that people love. People were calling a generational promo. Cool, whatever. But he's dropping F-bombs at the media left and right. And, you know, people always want to give MJF this pass. Oh, he's being a heel. He's being in character. There's a time and a place for everything. I think when, as a company, when you're dealing in relations with the media, that's not the time to be your most crude version of yourself, of a representation of yourself. Tony Khan was sitting right there. You know, like they always say with football teams, you're either coaching it or you're allowing it to happen. And right now, he's allowing it to happen, and it makes AEW look bush league. That brings me to my first hit. The hit that the first hit that I'm going to talk about is WWE doing a media scrum after Survivor Series. I watched this and I immediately said, that is how you do a post-event media availability for a wrestling show. There was, if you noticed, right, it was introduced by, you know, one of the commentators. The first question appeared to be a planet question to get a kayfabe answer to keep the story going. Then there were, you know, a bunch of questions in the middle there that were from the media who was there in attendance. Shout out to all the media who was there in attendance. And the last question appeared to be another kayfabe setup question, right? Why do this, right? If it's supposed to be, you know, like a real thing, why add the kayfabe stuff? Because it's a TV show, dummy. Why do anything that's not going to give you some content, right, that you can use to forge your storylines going forward? They asked Bianca Belair, you know, who she'd like to face at a WrestleMania, and you don't think that those answers are going to play into what happens at the Royal Rumble and WrestleMania? Come on, man, give me a break. And then Triple H came out at the end, and he fielded questions. And listen, a lot of times when you're a big-time corporate executive, you have to master the art of answering questions, saying a lot of words, and not really saying anything at all. Triple H does that a lot. But at least he gives answers. He doesn't just deflect them like, I'm not going to talk about that. You know, like, it's much better to at least give the answers where you're talking in circles and not really divulging any real information, but you're at least giving something that people can print and quote and speculate on, right? Like, just, that's called playing the game, no pun intended, right? Like, you know the media has a job to do, right? So give them something they can use. Give them something they can work off of. I thought WWE did this excellently, and I feel like everywhere where AEW fell short, WWE hit a home run. Like, I knew there was no way in the world that Roman Reigns was going to come out there and start off the Survivor Series media availability by dropping F-bombs at the media, right? No chance that was going to happen. Zero chance that was going to happen. But, you know, some places, that's okay. That's how they want to be represented. And it just makes them continue to look bush league. Hey, Second place is there for a reason. And if you want to stay in second place, keep doing second place things. Miss, having Hobbs take the losing fall in the triple threat with Joe and Wardlow. I mean, come on. Look, one of the big things about AEW Full Gear that I really liked is they kind of reset things a little bit. It seemed like there was a lot of matches where coming out of it, you would say that the AEW homegrown talents were coming out victorious over, you know, people that had gotten famous other places. But one place where they kind of did the opposite of that was with Will Hobbs. Now, Will Hobbs was in a triple threat match with Samoa Joe and Wardlow. Wardlow, who's been getting a huge push, but has been kind of ice cold since he stopped working with MJF. But we can talk about that later. And Samoa Joe, who's a vet and has two titles now for some reason. So they had Hobbs take the losing fall. But not only did he take the losing fall, he got powerbombed to death by Wardlow. Then Joe comes in and just finishes him off. So Hobbs was just looking like the weak link out of the whole match. And really, you did him no favors with the way that you booked that match. So thumbs down for that. To me, that was a huge miss. I think Hobbs has superstar written all over him. And you want to have somebody, especially if it's one of the newer, fresher talents, come out of a match like that looking stronger. Which brings me to my last hit. Austin Theory losing the Money in the Bank briefcase, being buried in the eyes of so many, and then coming up huge at Survivor Series in a triple threat match against Seth Rollins and Bobby Lashley. Look, some of you guys just thought they were sweeping Austin Theory right into the trash and throwing him away with the failed cash-in of the Money in the Bank briefcase. Why would he cash in for the U.S. title? But I said the moment it happened, that was a great thing. Why was it a great thing? Because, first of all, let's talk about why you guys were so invested. You guys have gotten used to ranking a wrestler or fixing your opinion on a wrestler based on what you think Vince sees, right? So you would look at a guy like Austin Theory, and you would see him get placed in premium positions working with Vince McMahon and you know, given that whole... Oh, hey, thanks, Siri. working with Vince McMahon and being in a very prime position, right? Which understandably looks like he's going to be elevated to a top spot. But had Austin Theory cashed in that Money in the Bank briefcase on Roman Reigns and been having a world title run where he was the world champion right now, do you think you guys would look at him as a strong champion? Do you think you guys would look at him as a credible champion? No. No chance. No chance. He'd be a weak-looking champion, and you'd just be waiting for somebody to come along and him lose that title. If he was the champion now, you would say there is no way Austin Theory would be the world champion going into WrestleMania. Definitely not. No chance. Because his name's not the type of name that anybody would get excited about, outside of his family maybe, right? About the idea of him headlining a WrestleMania main event. Night one, night two, the pre-show, none of it, right? He was not ready for that spot because he has not been built up in the eyes of the audience as someone deserving of that spot. You guys thought he was just going to get that spot, but you didn't think he deserved that spot. And what happened with him cashing in and losing and then coming back to win in a triple threat match against two people who are made men, Bobby Lashley, multiple-time world champion, Seth Rollins, multiple-time world champion, two guys at the top of their game and at the top of Monday Night Raw, and he came out of a triple threat with both of them with the U.S. title. They reset Austin Theory's character completely. No, he's not doing the selfies anymore. He's not doing the silliness, not trying to be an aggravating, annoying guy. He's like, yeah, I'm good, and I'm on the way up, and I won, and there's nothing you can do about it. That's a totally different character than he was a month ago. It's time for everybody to admit, dropping that briefcase was the best thing that could have happened to him. And getting into this triple threat and getting a clean pinfall victory in a match with two guys who are made men, main eventers, was way better than cashing that Money in the Bank briefcase. So Austin Theory, I'd say he came out of Survivor Series looking pretty good. That's my hit. Our top story of the week, without a doubt, unless you've been living under a rock, the Bloodline reigns supreme. The Bloodline continues to reign supreme. Everybody put your ones in the air. This is awesome, man. Like, look, you know, I'm typically a dissenter. I've been called a parade pisser. I don't typically go with the flow because I am the flow, okay? I go with what I think is right. I don't really care necessarily what other people think is right. I go with what I think is right. You know what I mean? That makes sense to me. But you got to recognize the real when it's right in front of your face. You got to recognize the real when it's right in front of your face. And this was excellent. Survivor Series was absolutely excellent. Swig of water real quick. We came into this night expecting a swerve from Sami Zayn. And we got a swerve from Sami Zayn. It just wasn't the swerve we were expecting, right? We were expecting Sami Zayn to turn on the Bloodline, to backstab them, or to mess up in some way, causing the Bloodline to kind of excommunicate Sami, leading to, you know, Sami being the one to maybe join up with Kevin Owens and challenge the Usos for the tag titles and start the crumble of the Bloodline in that way, right? This is important. Why did we expect that? Is it partially because that's the story they were telling? Maybe. Is it partially because that's the story we were looking for? I think that's more likely. See, we have a tendency, right? And this is not unique to wrestling fans. This is not like me finger pointing at wrestling fans. But when you're watching any good story, any good TV show, any good movie, you look at what's happening and your mind naturally tries to jump ahead to say what's next, right? You try to think like, what's going to happen if they go around that corner? Or who's the killer? You know, or whatever it is, right? What's the mystery that that they're going to solve, that they're going to reveal at the end of this movie, right? That is a natural thing that we all do. Now, when it comes to wrestling storylines, what we typically do is we try to figure out how someone's title reign is going to come to an end. And in the case of Roman Reigns, this is no different. We all keep trying to, you know, fantasy book in our head how this is going to all come tumbling down for Roman and the Bloodline and all of that. And the latest culprit that we've had is Sami Zayn. But there's a reason for that. There is a reason for that. The reason for that is because this story has been about Sami Zayn. They've been telling a lot of this story about Sami Zayn. And this story, this is the most original wrestling storyline in years, right? I mean, like, if you think about a lot of wrestling stories, they're really just recycled and told kind of over and over and over again. But this is the first time I can remember, God, probably since the Attitude Era, right? And the thing that I always say to people who are like, oh, you know, the Attitude Era doesn't hold up. Like, I would agree. I would agree that in a lot of ways you could say the Attitude Era doesn't hold up in the sense that today's production level is way higher, right? The match quality is way better. You know, you could argue the athletes are better. You know, again, everything is more clean and more crisp and more polished. But the thing that wrestling fans today will never quite experience that was a staple of watching wrestling in, you know, from like 97 through like 2000, 2001, is that feeling of when it goes off the air, I can't wait to see what happens next, right? And this is the first storyline that, gosh, for so long, since I can remember, I cannot think of another storyline that has had me kind of on the edge of my seat saying, I want to see what's going to happen next. Now, it's not the same way. It's not exactly the same as as the Attitude Era, right? Because it's not like I want to see if Sting is going to drop down from the rafters and beat up the NWO this week. It's not like I want to see if Stone Cold is going to spray everybody with beer this week or, you know, pour cement in Mr. McMahon's Ferrari, right? Like, it's not like that. It's not, I can't wait to see what's going to happen because of the stunts. It's, I can't wait to see what's the next page in this story. I can't wait to see what's the next chapter in this story. What's the next twist? What's the next twist? What's the next turn? Where are we going next with this story? And here's the best part. I don't know. You don't know. Dave Meltzer doesn't know. Sean Ross Sapp doesn't know. Whoever is your favorite wrestling blogger or podcast doesn't know. Hell, at this point, I don't even know if Roman knows, right? One of the great things that Triple H said in his media availability was he said booking is kind of like a GPS. He's like, as long as you know where your destination is, sometimes it's okay to get off the road, take a right, take a left if it feels a little better, as long as you know where you're ultimately trying to get to. And I think there's a lot of that going on. I think they're going with what feels right and what is, you know, what will make the story most impactful at this point in the road, in the timeline. And it's working, man. It's working. The story is phenomenal. And what they did on Saturday night at Survivor Series was, you know, it was phenomenal. The storytelling from the start of that show to the end of that show, and they kept looping in just the little, you know, the little clips of what would happen, what had happened previously on SmackDown, where Jay overheard Sammy talking to KO, right? And then Jay goes to Roman and tells him about Sammy. And then Roman talks to Sammy. They have a, you know, Roman needs to figure out where Sammy's loyalty lies. And then the viewer at home, we're sitting there waiting to see how this is all going to play out. Does Roman trust him? Does Roman not trust him? Are they going to turn on Sammy, right? And again, the way it all played out, man, Sammy proved his loyalty, right? Sammy proved his loyalty to the Bloodline. He sacrificed KO, laid him right out so Jimmy Uso could, so Jey Uso could give him the splash and get the 1-2-3 in the War Games. And, you know, after the match, Roman gives Sammy a big hug. Jey gives Sammy the biggest hug, right? Embraces him and shows that he's being accepted and welcomed into the Bloodline, right? Honorary Uso no more. Sammy is a full-on Uso at this point, right? So a lot of us were sitting there watching this at the end going, what? What? So where's the story going now, right? Like, and again, this is a beautiful thing. This is a beautiful thing. It's fun to try to predict where the story is going, and it's even more fun when you get when it's not predictable, right? When you think you know where it's going to go, but it's just, hey, you know, maybe this left is a little better right here than this right, and we're still going to get to our destination, but we're going to take a different route, right? And speaking of taking a different route, like I said, I don't know where this is going. You don't know where this is going. And that's a big part of what makes this fun. But I tell you what I do know. What I do know, after tonight, I am 100% confident in saying that Sammy could be the one. Sami Zayn could be the one. Sammy could be the one to dethrone Roman Reigns. Sammy could be the one to dethrone Roman Reigns, take the Universal Heavyweight WWE Championship 24/7 Intercontinental Up, Down, Left, Right, AB Start Championship. I think Sammy could be the one to take the titles from Roman. I think he could be the one to dethrone Roman. And why is this so important? I'm going to tell you why this is so important. Roman is on, he's in the midst of a 9,7200 day reign. Michael Cole reminds us every time he comes out. And it's not just about the length of the title reign. due to the fact that he's had the title for so long and everything revolves around him, right? Like, the question isn't, what are we doing for Royal Rumble? The question is, what is Roman doing at Royal Rumble? The question isn't, what are we doing for Elimination Chamber? The question is, what is Roman doing at Elimination Chamber? The question isn't, what are we doing for WrestleMania? The question is, what is Roman doing at WrestleMania? Roman is the sun at this point. Everything revolves around him, right? Everything revolves around him. And he's carrying that weight phenomenally, right? Like, he's showing no cracks in his ability to hold that position. He's doing a great job. The problem is, once you take that title off of him, that's going to be some big shoes for the next person to fill. Now, I don't think the next person necessarily can replace Roman, right? Because Roman Reigns has been, the audience has been conditioned for, like, what, 7 years now to view Roman Reigns as the top guy, right? And there's no way you can prep someone to take over that spot in the eyes of the audience in, you know, 6 months, really probably even a year, right? Like, it'll take a really long time to really condition someone, the audience, to see someone else truly on Roman Reigns' level. But what you can do is you can make sure that when you make that title change, that you make that title change to someone that is white hot to the fans. Someone that is going to get the biggest possible pop you could possibly think of when you make that title change. And Sami Zayn is that guy. Sami Zayn is that guy. And if you don't believe me, just look at Survivor Series. Just look at Survivor Series. Survivor Series was a show built around a match, built around a storyline, featuring the biggest star in the industry, but it was all about Sami Zayn. The story leading up to this for weeks has been all about Sami Zayn. And now going forward, we'll see if it continues to be about Sami Zayn. And the fact that you can get enough of the audience's attention, that you can pull it away from the sun enough to where you are the focal point of the story, that says that the potential is there for people to love Sami Zayn on a level that we haven't seen in a very long time. If you can tell a story to where people can be caring about, like think about this. Roman barely factored into the finish of that match. Roman barely factored into the finish of the War Games match. But people still cared. People were very invested. The word I've been using consistently talking about this Bloodline story is storytelling. And if you look on your Twitter timeline, you will see that echoed by so many people. The storytelling. The storytelling. The storytelling. And one of the best parts of that storytelling has been Sami Zayn. And so when you get to a point where Sami is beloved by the audience, it's going to be something to see. Now, how do you get there? How do you get there? Well, I'm going to tell you how you get there. Sami Zayn wins the Royal Rumble. Sami Zayn wins the Royal Rumble. And then he's got the Bloodline there with him. And they're congratulating him. And then, you know, over the next coming weeks on, you know, Monday Night Raw and SmackDown, they're talking to Sami, just basically trying to convince him that he should forfeit his title shot. He shouldn't take the title shot. Just let Roman have the night off at WrestleMania or whatever. And eventually they come to a point where Sami's like, no, I'm not going to forfeit the title shot. I'm going to take the title shot and I'm going to try to win the title at WrestleMania. And then they jump him. They beat him down something fierce. They leave him laying for dead. And at that point, Sami Zayn becomes a made man. If you need a reference for this in wrestling history, now I told you this has been, you know, the most original storyline I've seen in a very long time. But certain elements of this story have been told before, right? And if they do it like this, this will be almost an exact copy of what happened to Sting at the hands of the Four Horsemen in, I want to say it was 1990 or 91. Sting won something where he became the number one contender. Obviously, Ric Flair was the world champion. Sting became a member of the Four Horsemen where, you know, they were kind of trying to keep him close, you know, so that he didn't go against the champ. And eventually, Sting told him that he wasn't going to relinquish his number one contender shot. And what did the Horsemen do? They jumped him. They beat him down. They kicked him out of the Horsemen. In the process of that, Sting ended up injuring his knee in real life, and he was then he was forced to leave for a few months to rehab. And what happened though is it made Sting a made man. It made him the biggest babyface in the company. People believe that the Horsemen, they beat Sting down and they took him out all to protect Ric Flair and his championship, and that made people want to see Sting win that title so bad. And if they do that same thing with Sami Zayn, Sami Zayn will be a Daniel Bryan level babyface. I am not exaggerating. I'm not stuttering. Sami Zayn will be a babyface, the level of which we have not seen since WrestleMania 30. People will go crazy and lose their minds the moment that Sami Zayn dethrones Roman Reigns. Now, again, this is not something you do where Sammy just all of a sudden becomes Superman and is beating everybody in front of him. But he's got that underdog thing. So you give him a good beatdown. Really stack the odds against him. And people will rally behind Sami Zayn, much like they did with Becky Lynch. Just have him start going slowly on a winning streak. Slowly on a winning streak. Then you have him get a big win. And then you have him take some losses, right? Where it really looks like the odds are stacked against him and the fans will be behind him like you have never seen before. Now, I'm not saying that they are going to do this. I'm not saying that they're going to do this. But if they choose to go this route, it's going to be major. MJF is better than you, I guess. So MJF finally won the AEW World title at Full Gear. And this is everything AEW fans have been waiting for, right? Like, this is their homegrown guy. This is a guy who's been positioned to be the rising star of this company ever since it started, right? If you think about when AEW was leading to their first pay-per-view, Cody worked with MJF, and the big angle was MJF turning his back on Cody Rhodes. Right. And from that moment, it was set in motion that MJF would be the rising star that they would build around. Now, you know, since then, you know, a lot's going on. And listen, MJF is really good. Right. MJF is really good. MJF is one of the few wrestlers in the building, in the business, who can talk up a match with no help. Right. Like MJF could talk up a match against, you know, Brian Pillman Jr., right, by going out there and insulting his mom and insulting his sister and insulting Cincinnati and like all of this stuff. And people are into it, right? People are into it. And because MJF has that ability, MJF as the champion doesn't really need that much direction. He doesn't need like a major feud because he can just come out there and just talk crap and get everybody riled up week after week after week. And he'll talk about how, you know, he's going to cause a bidding war in 2024 and he's the youngest this and the generational that. And, you know, I mean, look, I think MJF is really good at that stuff. But I got to be honest, I get a little bit of fatigue with the way people talk about MJF because, as you just heard, I think MJF is really good at a lot of stuff. But the way some of y'all be talking about this dude, man, like, I just, like, y'all really act like this is Ric Flair in, like, 88. You know, that is the way y'all act about MJF, man. Y'all act like, you know, and, again, I think MJF does a lot of great stuff. I'm just not moved. I'm not compelled where it's like, oh, God, what's MJF doing? I have to see it. But, like, you know, but a lot of people really, really are, you know. And again, I guess this is me being a parade pisser again. This is me being a parade pisser. But I'm just, I'm waiting to get excited about what it is, about just seeing MJF. Like, I'm not like, you know, I don't know. I don't know. I just, the way that some of you guys are so in love with MJF, and you can drop down in the comments if you know, you're watching this on YouTube or, you know, or Facebook or anywhere else. Go ahead and drop down in the comments. Tell me, here's my question for everybody. What is it that you love about MJF so much? Tell me. Explain it to me so that I can love him too. Again, you don't have to explain to me he's a good talker. I get it. I've seen him wrestle. It's fine. There's nothing, you know, he's certainly not like bad at wrestling. He's fine. He's fine. But like, people have been losing their mind at the thought of MJF becoming champion, salivating for it. And I just want y'all to drop down in the comments and just tell me, what is the thing you love about MJF so much? I just want to know. I want to know. I just want to know. I'm curious. Because, you know, he teeter-tottered on, like, you know, being a babyface, and people were eating that up. He was out there giving his sob stories about the way people treated him when he was young. People ate that up. So it's not the, you know, for the people like, oh, he's just a good heel. Like, no. It's him. You love him. And just tell me, drop right down in my comments. I just want to know, what is it that makes you bond, makes you connect to MJF? Because y'all love this man. Y'all love this man. And I'm not, I'm not trying to hate. I want somebody to explain it to me so that I can love MJF too. I think he's good at talking. He's a good talker. He's fine in the ring. And I don't know, like, I'm not compelled. I'm not moved. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of the, I was a wrestling fan growing up, and then, people were mean to me, and William Regal didn't love me enough. It doesn't land with me. You know what I mean? It doesn't land with me. But I'd like it to, right? I mean, like, I want to get super excited whenever I see MJF come on my TV screen. So again, please enlighten me. Share with me what you love about MJF. Here's what I think is great about MJF. Like I said before, you don't have to have the next step designed already. I think MJF can reign as champion for a while. I'm not saying this feels like an end point for AEW, but I don't think they have to have the next champion ready to go. I think because of MJF's ability to consistently talk up heat, I think you can rest the title with him for a while and try to get a babyface hot. I mean, I would think the logical person would be Wardlow, right? Just to continue as a continuation of the story with Wardlow being like his servant or whatever. And then, you know, Wardlow powerbombed him to death. And, you know, that's when MJF went on his vacation. And I would think you'd want to pick up that story at some point. But when, though, right? Like, when do you get back to that? Because you don't want MJF to have a short title reign, you know? So, I don't know. But AEW fans, please tell me. Please tell me. And by the way, I'm not anti-AEW. There's some stuff on AEW I like. I tune in every week and watch, and I am doing my best to like this product. But there's a lot of stuff AEW does that it makes it seem like they don't really want me to like it that much. But, you know, whatever. We'll see. So, yeah, I'm here for MJF as champion. I'm just not as drawn into it as some of you are, and I'd like to be. So yeah, like I said, let me know what's popping. Hey, ladies! This is the part of the show where my girls at, where I like to talk about all the great and fun things that are happening with women in the world of professional wrestling. And let's start off with this. Jordynne Grace and Masha Slamovich ran it back last week at Impact Wrestling's Overdrive show. It was a show on their Impact Plus and Impact YouTube Insiders. And they had a Monsters Ball match. It was a weapons match. And listen, they went to war. They went to war. They were letting each other have it. It was a long match. Masha Slamovich, I believe, is known for a lot of the deathmatch stuff. She does that, like, in her independent work. But Jordynne Grace came out victorious, and you know, what's next for Masha Slamovich? We'll have to see. But this is one of the matches that going into Bound for Glory, everyone was really excited about seeing Masha versus Jordynne Grace. And they did it good at Bound for Glory, and they came back and did it again, did it big again at Overdrive. So shout out to Masha, shout out to Jordynne Grace. Can't wait to see what's next for you. Jordynne Grace also showed off her brand new Knockouts title championship belt this weekend at WrestleCade. Impact Wrestling got new belts for all the champions, for the tag team champions, for the X Division champion, for the world champion Josh Alexander, and for the Knockouts champion Jordynne Grace. Speaking of the Impact Wrestling Knockouts, Mickie James continued her last rodeo by defeating Taylor Wilde at Overdrive. But after Mickie James' win, she was greeted by her longtime rival, Deonna Purrazzo. And Deonna came out and told Mickie that she wants to be the one to stop Mickie James' last rodeo, to give her that defeat that ends her career. As the homies at Public Enemies would say, long-term booking. If you look back within the last year, Mickie James and Deonna Purrazzo had one of the best feuds in pro wrestling, bar none. It was outstanding. You know, they made it personal. You know, it included Mickie James showing up at the Royal Rumble with the Knockouts World title. And it was cool, man. It was one of the cooler things that happened in all of wrestling last year. So I love the idea of Mickie's journey coming full circle with Deonna Purrazzo. I'm curious, though, as to how this is going to end, which is always good, right? It's good to be curious and to not feel like you know exactly where this is going. But Mickie James is basically doing the thing Ric Flair did for his retirement, where she goes, you know, the next time I lose, that's going to be it for me. That's where my career is ending. And I'm curious if she's going to end her career with her match against Deonna Purrazzo, or if she's going to go on and have another run as Knockouts champion. Again, she certainly did a hell of a job with that title the last time she had it. I'd love to see her get one more run, because in my opinion, over the course of the last, I don't know, 18 months, Mickie James has taken the top spot as the greatest Impact Wrestling Knockout of all time, in my humble opinion. Congrats to Jamie Hayter on winning the AEW Women's World Championship by defeating Toni Storm at Full Gear. A couple of nights later on Dynamite, it was announced that Thunder Rosa has relinquished her claim to the title, and now Jamie Hayter and retroactively Toni Storm are officially recognized by AEW as the last two Women's World Champions. So congrats to them. Jade Cargill shut it down at Full Gear by coming out dressed as, I believe her name is Shatara from the Thundercats. Man, she had on a leotard and what, I can't tell if it was tights or body paint, but either way, like, it did not leave much to the imagination. But Jade is a superstar, man. Her outfits, you know, a lot of people don't love Jade's wrestling, but you know, I heard somebody say this, if you guys get a chance to tune into Turnbuckle Talk Spaces on Twitter, usually every Tuesday night. It's a great, fun community where, you know, we talk about wrestling. And somebody brought up Jade Cargill, and somebody made the great point of saying that, you know, Jade should be treated like Goldberg in her matches. And I totally agree with that. We don't need Jade Cargill out here putting on wrestling classics, at least not right now. She's a phenomenal athlete. She has a great look. Everything about her oozes superstar. There's no reason for her to be going out there trying to put on Matt classics. She doesn't need to do that. She doesn't need to do that. She's great. She's an attraction. She's super good. And again, she doesn't need all the extra bells and whistles of a great wrestling match. But yet and still, from a story standpoint, I thought that Jade Cargill and Nyla Rose did a great job closing out their feud. They were doing a story where Nyla Rose had stolen the TBS championship belt, and Nyla was parading herself around as the TBS champion. She was doing press conferences and you know, answering questions as the TBS champion. I like they even put up on the graphic, they had TBS champion Jade Cargill versus TBS champion Nyla Rose. I thought that was a really good touch. But Nyla Rose did an excellent job, you know, as a foil to Jade Cargill. And to be honest with you, I wouldn't have been too mad if Nyla Rose actually beat Jade Cargill and kept that title, because I think Nyla Rose is such a good antagonist that if you wanted to turn Jade Cargill a babyface, which, by the way, she's going to end up being eventually, because she's too big, too beautiful, too sexy. Like, she just has too many things that people find attractive, right? And I don't just mean like attractive like in a good looking way. I mean, like, she's a person that people gravitate to. She is a star, okay? She's a star, and you can't you can't deny that, you can't hide that. So as she's going out, you know, signing autographs, shaking hands and kissing babies, it's gonna be harder and harder to keep presenting her as a heel. So she's gonna have to turn into a babyface eventually. You might as well, you know, let someone like Nyla Rose be her foil. But just my two cents on that one. All right. Last but certainly not least, you got to give it up for all the women that participated in the War Games match last Saturday at Survivor Series. Damage Control, Bayley, Io Sky, Dakota Kai, Nikki Cross, Rhea Ripley, and of course, Bianca Belair, Becky Lynch, Mia Yim, right? Mia Yim was in there? Who else was in there? Who else was in there? Alexa Bliss and Asuka, the amazing, wonderful, super talented, one of my favorites, Asuka. And just, you know, big shout outs to all the ladies who participated in that match. The match was really good. It was a lot of fun. There were some spots that looked a little, you know, could have been a little better, but ultimately it was a fun match. I enjoyed it. They killed it. And I wouldn't see, contrary to what my man Duke says, I don't see any question that they'll continue to do the women's War Games matches on the main card. And in following up the women's War Games match, the next night on Raw, or the couple days later on Monday Night Raw, I started to notice a little bit of dissension between Alexa Bliss and Bianca Belair. And let me tell you something, I'm here for this. I'm here for this because watching Alexa Bliss have several women's championship title reigns was one of the most annoying things in all of wrestling for me a few years ago. So if they put her in a program where she's fighting Bianca Belair, I would like nothing more than to watch Bianca Belair rip Alexa Bliss limb from limb. Bianca Belair mentioned at the Survivor Series media availability that her potential opponents that she might like to face for WrestleMania would be either Rhea Ripley or Charlotte Flair. I think they've been sitting on a Charlotte Flair comeback. Charlotte Flair posted a picture, I think, on her Instagram of her wrestling boots, and it kind of, from the angle she posted it, looked like she was, you know, sitting down mid-workout with those wrestling boots on. So I think we're going to get ready to see Charlotte Flair back anytime soon. People been giving Ronda Rousey a lot of flack for the match she had with Shotzi. Listen, Shotzi is not necessarily a ring technician herself. As much as Ronda Rousey took to wrestling really well, you gotta remember, she still has only been doing this book for so long, and she's still kind of a part-timer at it. So, like, cut her some slack. Cut her some slack. She does bring name value to the show. Now that she's working with Shayna Baszler, I think that that opens up a whole new avenue of things that she can do as a heel, as a bad guy. She can tell the fans off like I know she really wants to. And it's going to be a lot of fun. You know what I mean? It's going to be a lot of fun to see. So that's it for the ladies. But I just want to give a big shout out to my New York Jets. Yes! Yes! Listen, the New York Jets made a bold move. They made a bold move the last couple of weeks. Jets drafted Zach Wilson with the number 2 overall pick. And listen, when you invest a pick that high in a quarterback, it's tough to step back and say, you ain't getting it done, pal. This ain't it. But their coach, Robert Saleh, had the cojones to say, hey, man, you ain't getting it done. Have a seat. He put in the backup quarterback. My man Mike White, whatever you want to call him. Listen, White Mike got a fresh fade. Okay, they said White Mike from Florida, so White Mike probably got some. You know what I mean? He probably got some homies from the hood. Okay, plus if you play football long enough, you know, I'm gonna say you're bound to, because you know, you see how the way these locker rooms kind of shake out, who hangs with who. But I'm just saying, some of these white dudes get radicalized. You know what I mean? Hanging with some of the brothers in the locker room, and Mike White kind of looks like one of them dudes. You know what I mean? I wouldn't be surprised if Mike White could hoop. You know, because I'm just saying, his fade look kind of fresh. That's not the fade of a man who does not have black friends. I'm just saying. So, Mike White got in. Oh, my God. They played the Bears this past week. And I've been rooting for the Bears all year because I hated the way they did Justin Fields dirty in the pre-draft process. But Justin Fields wasn't playing this week. He was on the sideline, just like Zach Wilson. So, I was full on Jets. I've been full on Jets anyway. But I still would have been rooting for Justin Fields to do well. But being that Justin Fields wasn't playing, that conflict was removed. And Mike White, White Mike, busted down on the Bears. I think it was something like 315 yards, 3 touchdowns. Oh! I haven't seen a Jets quarterback play like that since Mike White. Okay? Mike White got in last year and played like that. It was beautiful, and I absolutely loved it. So shout out to all my Jets fans. If any Jets fans watching this right now, go ahead and hit that like button. Let your boy know you like that right there. Okay, so shout out to the Jets. Hopefully Mike White stays in that seat for a while. Keep playing well. You don't got to be Superman. Just get the ball to the receivers who need it, because you got some good players. And let's keep winning, baby. Let's keep winning, okay? All right? Listen, that's going to be it for me. That's all I got. That's my show for today. Thank you guys so much for taking a few minutes to kick it with me. If you want to tweet me online, you can tweet me at Talking About Pod. You can tweet me at TW Talking About. Again, tweet me. I tweet back. You can catch me on Tuesday nights at the Turnbuckle Talk Spaces with the homie Mimi Shells, My Kicks and My Fix. So many good people we have in there. Justin, Monet, all the homies. You know what I mean? I don't want to leave nobody out. Shout out to, you know, all the good people who I vibe with. And yeah, man, listen, I hope you guys enjoyed the show. Like I said, drop your comments down. Send me some tweets. Follow me on Twitter. Like, comment, rate, subscribe. Be nice to people. I love you guys. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. And until next time.